Exodus chapter 13, verses 17 to 22. So Exodus chapter 13, starting from verse 17, and I'm reading from the NIV. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt, ready for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because Joseph had made the Israelites swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people.
Thank you, Stephen. And just so you know, this is Stephen's last month with us as one of our ministry apprentices, so do make a point of seeing Stephen this month before he finishes. This message this morning is entitled, When God Leads Another Way. You see, life doesn't always go the way that we plan or expect. Maybe to start off, can you think back to when you were a child? Think back to a question that I suspect you were asked as I was asked. What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do when you get older? I wonder how you answered then. But what I'm really interested in is how many of us are doing that thing now? Anyone, action of interest? A couple of people. Alice, you want to be a lawyer since you were a child? Okay. Rachel, we need to pray. We need to pray for you. It's interesting that not a lot of us are doing the thing. If you were to ask my kids right now what they want to be when they grow older, on a good day, they would tell you a soldier or an animal doctor. On a bad day, a gamer or a penguin. I'm hoping they grow out of that one. I'm not where I expected to be 20 years ago when I first came to Edinburgh as a student. God had better plans in mind. But yeah, I'm conscious not everyone feels able to say that. I'm very conscious that I know many people for whom things have not worked out the way that they had hoped, the way that they had dreamed, the way that they had planned. And that is hard. And maybe that is how you feel this morning. There are lots of reasons why you might feel that way. Maybe you're not in the relationship that you had dreamed of. Maybe you're not in the career that you had trained and planned on. Maybe you don't have the kind of easy, happy family that you always wanted. Maybe your health or your finances aren't in the condition that you had expected to enjoy at this time in your life. Perhaps sometimes you look around at what other people have that you don't have. And deep in your heart, deep in your soul, you just feel, God, I am disappointed with what you have appointed. And if you're in that kind of place, if you're feeling that way, then you're in the midst of this experience that we're calling when God leads another way. Now, the good news is that if you feel that way this morning, then you are not alone. You're not the first people to have walked that hard road. Because when the people of Israel left the land of Egypt, God also led them on a road that they did not plan and did not expect. And in this passage that Stephen's just read to us, Exodus chapter 13, verses 17 to 22, I think we find three reassurances when we find ourselves being led by God on another road. The first reassurance comes in verses 17 and 18, and it's this: God knows his plans for us. Verse 17 begins, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For generations, the Israelites had lived in the land of Goshen, in the northeastern quadrant of Egypt. And if they had had access to Google Maps or to SatNav, then they could have calculated the shortest, fastest, most direct route to the Promised Land. It would have taken them to the north, towards the Mediterranean Sea, and then along the coastal road upround into the Promised Land. That was the fastest way to get where they wanted to go. It was near. But that is not the way that God led his people. Instead, we read verse 18, "But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness towards the Red Sea." He doesn't take them north. He takes them south, not towards the Mediterranean, but towards what we would call the Gulf of Aqaba. He is leading them deeper into Egyptian territory. He is leading them out into the desert. He's leading the total opposite direction of the Promised Land. You can just imagine the people of Israel looking at each other, scratching their heads, asking each other, "What's going on? Where are we going? Is Moses lost? Does he know where he's going?" These are the kinds of questions that I think they were asking, because if we were in their sandals, they're the questions that we would be asking. If we're honest, there are times when we ask questions like that of God. We wonder, "God, do you know what you're doing? Do you know where you're going?" Because it doesn't seem to make any sense to us. Instead of leading us to the land of milk and honey, instead he seems to be leading us out into the dry and dusty desert. Instead of leading us out of danger into safety, instead he seems to be leading us right into the thick of battle. And at the moment, it doesn't always make sense. But this passage reassures us that God knows his plans for us. He knows what he's doing, even though we don't know what he's doing. God has reasons for leading us in ways that we don't expect. In fact, in verse 17, in the second half of that verse, you'll see that God confides in Moses the reason for this circuitous route to the Promised Land. He says, "For God said, 'Lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt.'" Yes, the northern road was the fastest, but it was also the most dangerous road. Historians and archaeologists tell us that along that road, there was a series of Egyptian fortresses, castles, garrisons. And if Israel was to go that road, then they would face one obstacle after another to try and escape. It's the fastest road, but it's the most dangerous road. The Israelites don't know that, but God knows that. He sees the dangers ahead of them, over the horizon, that at that moment in time were invisible to them. God knows ahead of time what they can and can't handle. And he knows that if they were to face battle too soon, they would melt. We read in verse 18, they march out in battle formation, but they are not battle ready. At the first sight of the enemy, they will fail. They will flee. They will give up. They will go back into slavery. God knows that. And so he does not give them a situation that they cannot handle. And he leads them another way. Now, the fact that God had his reasons for leading the Israelites along a different way should reassure us that God has reasons whenever he leads us in ways that we don't expect to. God always has his reasons. God knows his plans for us, in other words. In another place we read these words, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." In other words, God knows his plans for us. Now, I have to confess to you that at the time, often we can't see what that plan is. We don't understand what God's reasons are. We're in the heat of the situation. We don't understand why things aren't going the way we had hoped and planned and dreamed and prayed. In that one respect, Moses has an advantage to us. Moses is told the reason. Most of the time, we're not told the reason. Most of the time, it's only with hindsight It's only looking in the rearview mirror that we begin to trace something of the mind and plans of God and begin to see, maybe that's why that happened. Maybe that's what God was doing. Not the only ones, Moses and the people of Israel are not the only ones who can testify to the fact that sometimes God leading us along hard and different ways is actually unexpectedly a way that God works in our life for our good, to grow us, to come close to us. Someone else who's that testimony is a lady called Laura Story. She's a singer, she's a songwriter. You might know her for her song, Blessings. Laura Story wrote that song after her husband was diagnosed with a brain tumor and very quickly afterwards died. But she reflects in this song on the unexpected blessings that God hides for us in hard times. She sings, what if your blessings come through raindrops? What if your healing comes through tears? What if 1,000 sleepless nights is what it takes to know that you're near? What if the trials of this life are your blessings in disguise? Laura's story is not the only one who can testify to the fact that sometimes it is in the hardest and darkest times and places that God does his best work in our lives. That it is in those times and places that he draws closest to us. It's been my experience. I'm sure it's been your experience. And so, friends, when God is leading you another way, you can be sure that he knows his plans for you. He is not mistaken. He is not confused. He is not lost. He knows exactly what he is doing. That's the first reassurance. Second reassurance you'll find in verse 19. This is that God remembers his promises to us. It's hidden there in verse 19 where we read, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for Joseph had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones with you from here. What you need to have in your mind here when it talks about Joseph's bones is something that you would find in the National Museum. If you go over to the Egyptian section of the National Museum, you will see there an Egyptian mummy. You will see this great golden sarcophagus painted in bright colors, because in ancient times in the land of Egypt, the great and good would be embalmed and they'd be wrapped up and their bodies preserved for the future. And that is what is then being carried by the people of Israel out of Egypt to the promised land. Joseph's sarcophagus, Joseph the mummy. Now, you may not be familiar with the story of Joseph if you're new to church, if you're new to the Bible. So let me just fill you in on some of the backstory. This is the last section of the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible. And Joseph is one of the 12 sons of Israel. He is one of the youngest ones, but he's also the favorite son of his father, Israel. Joseph knows it and is more than happy to parade that fact in front of his brothers. He likes to show off that dad loves him the best. Well, God also gave Joseph some prophetic dreams that Joseph was one day going to be great and powerful. He had a great destiny. And Joseph also liked to shove that in the face of his brothers to make them jealous. One day you'll bow before me. Well, his brothers, they didn't like that very much, and so they sought to put an end to all of his dreams. They beat him up. They sold him out. He winds up as a slave and a prisoner in Egypt for more than a decade. But Joseph is, if you like, the ultimate rags-to-riches story. Because that guy who started off as a slave winds up as the second most powerful man in Egypt, as the prime minister. And then at the end of the story of Genesis, at the end of Joseph's life, after he has been reunited and reconciled with his family, Joseph looks beyond his lifetime. And he says to his descendants, he says to his brothers, to his family, one day God is going to take you out of this land of Egypt and he's going to bring you back to the land of promise. And when you go, you take my bones with you and you bury me in the promised land. That's what's quoted here in verse 19, that promise that he extracted from them in Genesis chapter 15. Joseph died confident in God's promise that one day the land promised to Abraham, to Isaac, to Israel would be theirs. Now, Joseph's life is one giant example of when God leads another way. Joseph didn't expect his life to work out the way it did. Things did not go how and when he expected. It was a long, hard, painful journey. But Joseph's story is a testimony to us of the fact that God always keeps his promises. Yes, Joseph died in Egypt. He died not seeing the promised land again. But he died confident that one day his bones would. And in the end, he wasn't disappointed. God kept his promise. Joseph made it back to the promised land 400 years later. And this is a testimony to us that God always keeps his promises. God's promises, they never run out. They don't have a best before date. They're like a bottle of milk. Bottle of milk, if you wait too long, you don't drink it fast enough, eventually it's going to sour. It's going to start to stink. It goes off. It's no good anymore. But God's promises aren't like that. God's promises aren't like a gift card. I hope I'm not the only person who's received a gift card, put it in your purse or wallet, and then find it a while later and realize that it's expired and you've never used it. It's happened more than once. Don't give me gift cards. But God's promises aren't like that. God's promises are always good to be redeemed and to be fulfilled. If God has promised it, then we can rely on it. If God has promised it, he will keep it. No matter how long it takes, no matter how hard the road, God keeps his promises. Of that we can be sure. And the bones of Joseph tell us that not even death can stop us from inheriting God's promises. Although in his lifetime Joseph did not see the promised land, in death he saw the promised land. Reminds us that God's promises, they are not limited. They are not bound to the horizons of this world. They are not bound to under the sun. No, instead, ultimately, all of God's promises, they point ahead above the sun to the new world. And there in the new creation, we will all see fulfilled and we will all enjoy God's promises kept and fulfilled in full. And somehow when we get to that new world, somehow in a way I don't understand, but I believe is true, somehow all the bitter things in this life will make that life sweeter. Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. He tells us, "For this light, momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." C.S. Lewis once put it this way. Some skeptics say of temporal suffering, no future bliss can make up for it. Not knowing that heaven once attained will work backwards and turn even that agony into a glory. And so the reassurance this morning, friends, is that God keeps his promises to us. Whatever disappointments, whatever despair, whatever distress is afflicting you today, with confidence, I can tell you on the basis of God's word that it will not always be this way. That it will not always feel like this. Instead, one day your broken heart will be healed. One day your empty cup will be filled. One day your tears will be wiped away. One day your sadness will be drowned in joy. God has promised, and he will keep his promise. And so when God leads another way, keep holding on to his promises. So God knows his plans for us. God remembers his promises to us. Third and final reassurance this morning is that God keeps his presence with us. You see, when God leads us on another way, we don't walk that road alone. See that here in verse 21 and verse 22. God is with us on the journey. He doesn't leave us. He doesn't abandon us. That's what the Israelites experienced. We read that the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud, by night in a pillar of fire. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. And so on their long journey, weeks and months and ultimately 40 years through the wilderness to the promised land, on that long journey, every single day, God was with them. No one ever had to ask the question, well, where is God? Because if someone asked that question, they just had to point. He's over there. He's in the cloud. He's over there. He's in the fire. All day, every day, all night, every night, for 40 years, God was with his people and they could see him. He was with them. The Israelites didn't know the way to the promised land, but he did. And he was with them every step of the journey there. Now, as a man, it pains me to confess that sometimes I get lost. And as a man, I find it very hard to ask for directions. I'm very happy when someone looks lost in the street to stop and offer them help. But hypocritically, I don't want it myself. But sometimes I'm so desperate that I have to swallow my pride and ask for some help. And sometimes when I have got that far, the help is not very helpful. They don't know. Or the instructions are so complicated and convoluted, I can't follow them. I can't remember where I'm meant to be going. But that's not how God leads his people. The best possible help is the person who says to you, I know the way, and in fact, I'm going that way too. I will show you. And that's the way that God leads his people. He didn't just come down in the burning bush and issue all these instructions. Go south to the Red Sea, cross the Red Sea, go down the Sinai Peninsula coast, towards the end, turn to the east, march until you find the mountain. Once you've reached the mountain, turn north and walk up through the desert. God doesn't give his people a list of instructions ahead of time saying, follow these instructions and you will get to the promised land. No, instead, God comes along and he takes them by the hand and he walks with them and he leads them every step of the way. They don't know the way, but he knows the way and he will get them there. And almost every step of that journey, they annoyed him. They frustrated him. They failed him. But he never gave up on them. He was gracious. He was merciful. He was patient. And he got them where they needed to go. I find that so reassuring. As we go through life, we are faced with a myriad of choices and decisions and different doors and different paths and different opportunities. And we often find ourselves wondering, what does God want me to do? What most pleases God in this situation? What would most glorify God? Sometimes it would be really nice to have a pillar of cloud in the shape of a pointing finger saying, go this way. Sometimes it would just be nice to have a big, bright arrow of flame in the sky saying, go that way. Choose door A, not door B. It's tempting to be envious of the Israelites. And when I think that way, I have to remind myself, actually, I have something better than they had. And you have something better than they had too. In the next chapter, next week, we're going to see that inside that pillar of cloud, inside that pillar of fire, was the angel of the Lord. And to cut a really long story short, who is that? It's Jesus. It's the Son of God before he's come in the flesh, but he's in the cloud, he's in the fire. He's the one who's with his people every step of the journey to the promised land. And today, Jesus doesn't dwell in a cloud or in a fire. No, he dwells in the hearts of his people by his Holy Spirit. And that means we've got something better than they had. Jesus, when he moves in, he promises that he's never leaving. He's never moving out. He says he'll be with us to the end of the age. He says he'll never leave us or forsake us. And so today we don't have the visible sign. We have something better. We have the invisible reality. Every time you open your Bible, you can pray, God, speak to me. And he's inside of you, and he's going to speak to you through his word. You can be confident of that. Every time you close your eyes and you pray, and you say, Lord, lead me, guide me, he's going to do that. And when God is taking us in directions that we don't find comfortable, when he's leading us in ways that we did not expect, that we would not have chosen for ourselves, well, then we can be reassured that he is in us and he is with us and he is not going to leave us on our own. He is not going to lead us up that path and abandon us. No, he's going to be with us every step of the way till journey's end. And so today we've been thinking about how God sometimes, if not often, leads us in ways that we do not expect. As hard as it sometimes seems, God's way is the best way. And as we walk that road, we have these three assurances. One, that God knows his plans for you. Two, that God keeps his promises to you. And three, God keeps his presence with you. Wherever you are today, whatever you're going through, those are three assurances that you can take to the bank and you can rest and rely on and hold on to. I'm going to invite the band just to come back up and join me on the stage just now. And as we come to communion, we are remembering how Jesus himself has walked a hard and difficult road. When he was faced with the cross, he prayed for another way. But there was no other way. And we're saved and we're blessed today because he walked that road to its conclusion. And he walked that road alone, so that we would never be alone. And so we're going to stand and we're going to sing now, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, and then we'll celebrate communion together.